Next presents is Larry Rushen from Vassar College.
I'm a visitor at Vassar this year. My regular place of teaching is the community colleges. I've been teaching at LaGuardia Community College, CUNY, for the last 8 years, and that's what I'm going to talk about this afternoon. And that is the topic of my talk is the Malcolm X and the miseducation of African Americans at community colleges. There's considerable truth to Henry David Thoreau's assertion that we do not learn much from learned books, but from true, sincere human books, from honest and frank biographies. One such book, which eminently fits this description and from which much can be learned about the education of black and oppressed peoples, is the autobiography of Malcolm X. Not only is it a sincere and honest book, but it also conforms to Thoreau's other criterion for a good book. It is a book in which each thought is of unusual daring, such as an idle man cannot read, a timid one would not be entertained by, and which even makes us dangerous to existing institutions. Malcolm's audacious life is a paradigm of the African-American experience. From his early years, he was introduced to the reality of life as a day-to-day struggle that affords little or no security. In the form of his eighth-grade English teacher, Mr. Ostrovsky, Malcolm confronted the reality of a hostile white America that was afraid and contemptuous of a bright black man. His early childhood experiences of warmth and affection, acceptance and achievement, were all too suddenly aborted by contact with racism, rejection, violence, and consequently discouragement, the destruction of hope, and the death of aspiration. Incarcerated in a Massachusetts prison at age 20, after several successful years as a petty criminal and hustler, Malcolm became angry, violent, and destructive. Going in and out of solitary confinement for about a year, he was finally shocked out of his self-defeating aggression by his encounter with Bimby, a self-educated convict who lectured on history, religion, and Thoreau, and by his brother Reginald's proclamation that the white man is the devil. What, on the face of it, appeared as a wildly absurd statement, revealed to Malcolm that his life was not a mere accident of existence, but was the inevitable outcome of a series of events in which he played out his role as victim. For the first time, Malcolm initiated intensive reflection on his life experience, only to make another critical discovery. Lacking the capacity in his semi-liberative state to focus and communicate ideas, he found that he would have to acquire greater intellectual power in order to gain control over his life. Thus, Malcolm initiated one of the most extraordinary episodes in educational literature. Like Frederick Douglass, the American slave, a century earlier, he began the slow, painful process of self-education and self-examination. Ruining his eyes by reading in the dim light of his prison cell late into the night, Malcolm copied the entire dictionary line by line in a hesitating, incomprehensible scrawl. But Malcolm and Douglas had to use deception and subterfuge as they sneaked glances of their texts, while the legitimate authorities of the state, slave masters, and prison guards threatened them with brutal punishment. Despite these dire circumstances, Malcolm, like Douglas before him, ultimately acquired the mental illumination that altered the course of his life and the lives of so many others. Is there a more redeeming image than a man outcast from life, achieving greater personal enlightenment than most of us will ever know? Here was a pimp, a drug pusher, and a burglar to whom Plato, Thoreau, Du Bois, and Muhammad could speak. Malcolm's struggle for self-knowledge, because it was so starkly hard-won, has something vital to say about the conduct of education for African Americans in our society generally, and their education of community colleges in particular. Malcolm was fortunate when he commenced his education. Because of his imprisonment, he had to design his own curriculum, and as chance would have it, he found a model in Bimbi and an excellent prison library at his disposal. He took it for granted that intellectual enlightenment came from immersing oneself thoroughly in the wisdom of the past. He read so widely, so deeply, and so successfully that he was able to claim that no one ever got more out of going to prison than he. "People don't realize," he later said, "how a man's whole life can be changed by one book." Months passed without his even thinking about being incarcerated. He had, in fact, never been so free in his life. It is depressing to consider what might have been Malcolm's fate if he had joined the almost 50% of black college students who seek education at a community college rather than through his prison library. Large numbers of African American students in today's urban two-year institutions, although certainly not convicted criminals, are in other respects not essentially different from Malcolm. They are seeking to find some livable space for themselves in an oppressive social system, and they come to these colleges seeking help. Like Malcolm, because of the negligence of the public schools, they are neither very knowledgeable about the complex workings of this society, nor well equipped with the academic skills that would aid them in seeking out this knowledge. They too find themselves in a social environment of racist inequality, injustice, and gross discrimination that would be thoroughly familiar to Malcolm if he were around today. The major educational problem encountered in the community colleges is that through their overemphasis on careers and vocational training, they are miseducating the young, especially blacks and people of color. In the process, they are systematically retarding intellectual growth and preventing development of future Malcolms. Education, which elevates vocational skills above all other concerns, whether the program trains secretaries, accountants, engineers, musicians, or physicians, is too educationally constrained to accommodate the full scope of human potential. While functional job skills are a necessary part of any complete education, vocational training, devoid of intellectual insight into the physical, social, political, and historical dimensions of students' lives and of human existence, simply perpetuates ignorance. Individuals may learn, but without fully comprehending why, whether, or what they should learn. Consequently, skill training without broader enlightenment is all too liable to result in mental dullness, narrowness of interests, prejudice, social apathy, and even self-hate. This is the kind of education Carter G. Woodson referred to when he said, "The chief difficulty with the education of the Negro is that it has been largely imitation, resulting in the enslavement of his mind." W.E.B. Du Bois, America's greatest theorist on the subject of educating oppressed people, refused to endorse technical and vocational education as adequate for any human being, no matter how economically and socially degraded they were by the prevailing system. For over 60 years, he protested narrow job training, as he repeatedly pointed out, that vocational education is generally considered appropriate for one portion of the population, blacks, racial minorities, despised immigrants, the poor, and women, but not for the portions of the population deemed more socially, intellectually, and racially worthy. It is reserved for some of the people, never recommended for all of the people. Malcolm would have agreed with Du Bois when he argued in the first decade of this century that it is precisely the poorest, most culturally deficient, most intellectually limited, most socially degraded who are most in need of the broadest, fullest, and best education imaginable. Malcolm made this discovery alone in his prison cell. Douglas, while but a slave child, all of these men knew that inferior education produces inferior people who are ill-equipped to struggle for psychological enlightenment and socio-political empowerment. They all believed that the aim of education for blacks and for all oppressed people should be the same as it is for everyone who values freedom and justice. In the words of Du Bois, it is to realize the broadest possibilities of life by seeking and developing the very best in every individual. The aim is not to make men carpenters, it is to make carpenters men. Tragically, most of our community colleges would all too readily agree with Du Bois' antagonist, Booker T. Washington, when he advised that in all ways, including education, the people on the bottom must drop down their buckets where they are and begin life at the bottom, meaning learn a trade, obtain some skill, get a job, earn a living. As the community colleges compete among themselves to resurrect Booker T. today, one cannot help hearing echoes of Du Bois' appeal that life is more than meat, even though life without food dies. Living is not for earning, earning is for living. The man that spends his life earning a living has never lived. The education that trains men simply for earning a living is not education. In other words, the foundation upon which to build a meaningful education for all students, especially blacks and people of color, must be constructed out of what in the colleges is called the liberal arts. It is the most fundamental basis for the acquisition of job skills, the promotion of career mobility, and the participation of a people in overcoming oppression and bringing about a more humane world. It is the kind of education that Malcolm intuitively created for himself in prison. It was designed for personal as well as group liberation. He took no three-credit courses and followed no degree program. Therefore, his definition of learning was broadly construed. Malcolm read widely and deeply into world history, philosophy, sociology, and religion. He absorbed the writings of W.E.B. Du Bois, Carter G. Woodson, J.A. Rogers, H.G. Wells, and Mahatma Gandhi. He read Schopenhauer, Kant, Nietzsche, and Spinoza, as well as the ancient Greek and Oriental philosophers. As he read, he was driven by a desire to understand as thoroughly as possible who he was, how he and his people came to be where they were in the world, and how he could bring about a more humane life. Malcolm created a curriculum of lasting value which exists at no community college anywhere in this country. It was a curriculum to inspire thinking, questioning, and doing. It was a curriculum that placed the student, his life, his culture, and psychological and social predicaments at the center around which all learning became genuine and alive. No wonder Malcolm could say that books were his alma mater and that books forever changed the course of his life. Another individual who found his own way to understanding was Huey Newton, co-founder of the Black Panther Party. Like Malcolm, he was a street dude and petty criminal. He was tough, semi-literate, and alienated. When Newton enrolled in an Oakland community college, his objective was not to obtain a degree, but to prove to himself that he was not as dumb as his public school teachers had insisted. After considerable personal battles, he found himself intrigued by the ideas of writers like Plato, Du Bois, and Baldwin. He became drawn into an extraordinary odyssey of self-discovery through the medium of wise books and stimulating dialogue about them. Once embarked on their voyages to true learning, both Malcolm and Newton discovered that among the worst deprivations that afflict the dispossessed is not economic poverty or physical oppression, but the mental deprivation that builds an intellectual prison from which there is often no escape. All unequal social systems develop such mental prisons for the oppressed. All education, especially when it can be otherwise, which does not aim to liberate minds from blindness, ignorance, self-hate, and inferiority, is wrongly designed and ultimately unethical. Given the drugs, violence, poverty, and racist destruction of contemporary ghetto life, it is understandable that community college students are desperate for a decent job so that they can support themselves and their families and escape the oppressive social pathology in which they are immersed. But to conclude from this, that all that students of color need is low-level, white-collar vocations as secretaries, bookkeepers, and computer technicians is racist patronization, which turns the colleges into educational ghettos for the black caste. The minds of such students are narrowly channeled through deadening rote learning, rule following, and planned stupidity. Fortunately, one large ray of hope exists within the educational firmament, the students themselves. During the past two springs, mainly black and Hispanic students have protested at the City University of New York. At the very moment that the Chinese students were demonstrating for political democracy in Tiananmen Square in Beijing, 10,000 CUNY students were marching from Wall Street through Times Square to demand educational democracy in the United States. In spite of harsh economic and social circumstances, in spite of the narrowness and poverty of their prior educational experiences, they still want to know. They want job skills, but they also want to go beyond the boundaries of the immediately utilitarian. The spirit of Malcolm is in them. Now, as in the time of Frederick Douglass, liberating education for oppressed peoples is considered illicit and subversive. Nevertheless, we cannot capitulate to the prevailing educational philosophy of deliberately trained ignorance. Our challenge is to create mind-expanding, empowering, and liberating intellectual and cultural environments worthy of future Malcolms. Let us move the community colleges into the small but growing stream of institutions of higher learning with a higher vision of what a black life and a fully human life are all about.